Welcome to the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Glad to have you company for another D Word Podcast. Bob Shay's journey from an ER nurse who hadn't picked up a guitar until his 40th birthday to becoming a full-time entertainer online and in care homes around his native southwest Florida, as well as finding time to write a book, is a remarkable one. And on this edition, we talk entertainment therapy with a man everyone knows as Nurse Bob. Well, Bob, it's great to welcome you as my guest on the D Word, Nurse Bob, as you are known. Welcome along. Going to be talking about entertainment, music, singing, and lots of really good stuff like that. First of all, I mean, tell us a bit about your story. How did you get into doing what you're doing?
I guess I should probably start with my grandmother when I was a teenager. She had what they called hardening of the arteries. And that's what they called it in the States. I don't know what they called it in years. So that was in the early 70s. And I, you know, my brother and I didn't understand it, and we teased her. In fact, my book is dedicated to her. But she was a flapper. And, you know, I sing songs today that she did the Charleston in front of me. She was like 70, which was ancient back then, right? And she did the Charleston, and she taught me some songs. So I think really that was the seed, you know, and I wasn't very nice because I was a rowdy little teenager. And then I did a lot of different jobs. And then at 40 years old, I became a nurse. And I started working, I worked in the ER for a long time, and then I got into rehab, and I got into all these different other disciplines in school nursing. I picked up the guitar at 40 years old, and I a year later, I was in a band, bluegrass, and I just found this, I found a place to play, and it was at a nursing home. This was like 2008. And then I got the band another one and another one. And then in about 11, I said to my friend, 2011, I think I'm going to start playing at nursing homes a little bit more. And a month later, I said, how you doing with that? And I said, I've got 16 performances a month for the next year. And from there, in 2015, I was working full time, and I had about 25 performances a month, and I was busy. And then one day I just said, you know, I better let this nursing thing go. I found another way of healing. And, you know, this is internal talk. So in 2015, I do about 30 a month at almost exclusively dementia care, 30 times a month for a while, 15 years almost.
That is a lot of shows, isn't it? If we add them up, Bob, 30 a month. I mean, you're doing, you know, nearly 400 a year, which is quite amazing. I mean, you know, just that in itself must take a lot. You know, you've got to be fit to do that, haven't you?
I have to run. You're right. I do. Somebody asked me this morning. I said I'm running. I have to keep myself together for this. It's demanding because it's not in front of a mic. I carry a mic, and my guitar is remote, and I'm doing yoga postures, and I'm doing, you know, I'm running 40 feet over there, and then I'm coming back and singing individually to each person. It's demanding.
That's, you know, that's the important bit as well, isn't it? To make your audience part of the show. And I've, you know, I would urge listeners, when you've heard this, go and see some of Bob's videos, because you're talking to everybody individually in a room. It's not just talking to people as a group.
And they're so isolated, you know, in their head. And they're also isolated because there's not a lot of communication interaction. Family goes to see them, some of them. Oh, my Lord. Oh, boy. I could talk about this forever, Pete.
Well, that's what we're here for, Bob. But, you know, you do find that, don't you? I mean, I guess people fall into a couple of categories when they go to visit. There are people that are very, very close and will go every day, and other people that perhaps go out of a sense of duty and probably don't know what to do when they get there, to be honest.
You know, it is. I watch this. I watch, from a sociologic, from a clinical perspective, and I've been watching it for years and years. And I watch how people come in, their relatives will visit, and then after a while, they just don't visit as much. And some stay intensely connected with their loved ones. I have a friend right now, and her husband is just declining, and more and more and more. And it's really, I wish we could go through stuff like this and have a collective knowledge, like, so each person doesn't have to go through their husband or wife or son or mother each time, and they can understand the ins and outs of it. Do you know what I mean with that?
Yeah,
Yeah.
no, absolutely. And I think it's, we're talking thousands of miles apart, but this is the world thing. This is a, this is a thing all over the world. And the interest, I mean, one interesting phrase that you've brought up, I wanted to talk to you about. Loads of music therapy going out there, to some brilliant music therapists, but you use the phrase entertainment therapy. And I've not really heard that before.
Well, right, because what is entertainment? Well, I mean, music is one thing. Entertainment is part of music is part of that, but really, really, what it is this. You know, it's this. It's like everybody in a collective feeling like I am there for that individual person, that I am singing, like Mick Jagger is singing right to me, but that's not like that. But you know what I mean? It's like how do you get that to the people? And who else needs it is the family member and the people who work there. They need the humor. They need a sudden spontaneity. And when you do that, it can be a little confusing for some of them. And I think they like, I hate to say they, you know what I mean? Like we. So I'll just use that word, we. So when people go off the rails, which I will talking, I have to stay and bring them focused back in, because I don't know if I'm explaining this right. Entertainment is a very strange thing because it's always live for me. It's you can't take back what you said, so you got to work your way through what you're saying right now.
Absolutely. And I think it's, the music is one thing, but it's the whole package, isn't it? And I think it make, gets people at their ease, etc. And I've talked to so many people about humour and dementia, and a lot of people think it's a very dark world, and we'll leave that. No humour here. But my friends living with dementia have produced some of the most humorous moments that I've known, and they are, they've got marvelous senses of humour.
Absolutely. And they've got such creative minds. The point how do I, as a human being communicating, how do I bring them or allow them levels of communication back? And sometimes they will be singing. I had this one gal, and she just went around me and put her head on my shoulder. They're always grabbing my guitar, and the workers, they're always trying to, and I'm like, no, let them do what they do. Because they are communicating with me in levels that I know they're there and I know they're with me. But nobody else would understand that. There's a story in my book called Bub 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 Billy. And Billy, that's all he said was Bub 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 Bub. And one day I was singing a song, and all of a sudden I just decided to change all the words to Bub 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 Bub. And next thing you know, we're all singing and he's singing right in tune. So it's a mistake for people to think they're not there, because it just takes a vibration. Where are they in the vibration? And when I bring that music vibration and the love to them, they reciprocate.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
couple of weeks ago, I had the honour of being invited to the launch of Patching the Puncher, the latest book from our friends Deb Bunt and Peter Berry. It's available now, and I'll be talking to Peter and Deb about it in a few months' time on the podcast. While I was there, though, I learned about Safe and Found Online, which will shortly be accepted by 70% of the police forces in the UK. Linked to the Herbert Protocol on Missing Persons. It's a free service, so do take a look at safeandfoundonline.co.uk. Back now to Nurse Bob. Yeah, I can really identify with that. When I was working, I had a guy who was a keen gardener, and he was basically non-verbal, didn't really say anything. And he used to take me around this garden in the hall where we were and just point at the flowers. And I say, they're nice, they're nice. Oh, that's, what's that one, or whatever. And after we'd done this probably for a couple of months, I was standing by the door. I'd stuck in my arms and he was standing by the door. And I said to him, can you open the door for me? And he opened the door for me. And as I went past, he just looked at me and said, all right. And suddenly I was halfway down the path and I did this kind of cartoon double take thinking, did he just say that? And so, you know, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah. I have this, I pull all my equipment. I try not to have a lot on a radio flyer, an old metal radio flyer. And I walked past this woman once and she looked down at that and she goes, I used to take my children in that. And the woman next to her says she hasn't spoken in 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we don't know what unlocks them. And I just, you know, I remember working the ER and somebody would be, you know, comatose. And you just don't know. You don't know where they are. Friend of mine just yesterday, I'm playing for her husband. And he's got his eyes closed and he's saying, he's mouthing the words. You know, we just don't know, you know. But music does bring them out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the book. It's called Peekaboo, I See Miracles. First question, I guess, you know, you've got a copy there, which I can see. Where did the title come from?
Exactly what I'm looking at, you know, when I play. And you know, somebody told me they didn't, you know, I had an editor said he didn't think the title was a good title. And I had to contemplate that. But, you know, it really, I believe, is a good one because when I play, like that woman, I mean, I hadn't spoken for 4 years. So, and I see it when it's a family member that sees the awakening, it's a miracle. You know, it really is a miracle and it brings such solace to them. But I see it all the time. You know, music and love, the eyes connection, the touch, kneeling down in front of them, doing, like I say, yoga postures, whatever it takes. I see miracles. I really do see miracles. Well, are they, if it can be replicated? I'm not sure. You know, if an action can be replicated, maybe it's not a miracle. But if you're a loved one, it's going to be a miracle.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, that explains it, you know, very nicely in terms of title of the book. Did you always mean to write a book, or you know, what brought about the thoughts about writing a book?
You know, it's a funny thing. I never thought about writing a book. And, you know, I take these long distance pilgrimages. The Camino de Santiago, you know, through Portugal and then from France over in 17, I did that. And I did Italy and I walked from Florence down to Rome through Assisi in Ireland. So anyway, I walk these pilgrimages. And when I walk, I talk into my phone and I watch the words. And so, you know, I've got thousands and thousands and thousands of pages just, you know, from my brain. But I started to realize that I was putting together a book because I started to think about all the miracles I'd seen playing music. And I decided, well, I remember Jimmy, so I'm going to write about Jimmy. And I remember all these little chats. They're very easy reading and very fast. No notes. That's a beautiful one. This woman would come up to me and all she would say, wonder if I have her paper. No. So after 4 years, she used to walk around me and she used to get in my way and I'd love it. And 4 years later, she's sitting in a wheelchair. I play my thing in front of everybody. I'm packing up my stuff and everybody's gone. I think I'm alone in the room. And all of a sudden I hear, and I look over and there she is. And I go over to say hi to her, and she intersects the vision with a pencil. And she goes, no, 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 no. And I'm watching this, and now I'm looking at the tip. No, 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 notes. And as she said notes, it touched down, and she was writing music notes on her paper. Somebody who hasn't spoken for years. I just wish people knew, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wish people knew, because it must be, I couldn't imagine being that person locked up in my head and locked up behind a door in a nice little place or whatever, you know, taken care of, and everybody leaves. Everybody I knew leaves. And I just couldn't imagine. It's like, it's kind of a prison.
Yeah.
You have to have empathy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the other thing you do with your work as well is, I know, you know, you do work with professionals. You've had stuff peer reviewed, and that's an important part of it as well, isn't it? So, you know, I suppose in all things we look at things and think I'm doing the right thing, but when you get someone professional who can also say, "Hey, you're doing the right thing," then you know that's got to be even more encouraging.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it is. And, you know, I consider what I do. It's humbling and it's an incredible blessing, you know, because I get to see. Well, first off, I'm walking into locked units. They in America, they just lock them up, you know, now don't get me wrong with this, please. But, you know, I'm not a big religious guy. I'm a spiritual guy. But the only one that went to see the lepers was Jesus. Everybody else was afraid of him. Maybe reasons are for that. Yeah, but I kind of, there's a little bit of a parallel here where they put them away in society and no one gets to see them but the professionals who care for them and family members, you know, or sometimes friends too, which I love to see. You know, I love to see people just go and read a book next to them. That's all they do. They just, you know, they might talk to them, they might not, but they have a presence next to the person they love.
Yeah, and you know, it's important not only what you do, but what you've observed in doing it. And as you say, you know, if you're in a locked memory care, then you know, you're the outside world coming in, aren't you? Because okay, you do get relatives, you do get friends, but someone completely detached from, you know, that world and then coming back in is a really important pair of eyes.
Yes. And to explain that outside world, you know, just to talk, well, we did this today and, you know, simple things like shopping, you know, going to the store, describing what, you know, what that is about, because some of them haven't been to shopping in many, many years. You know, so the different, you know, it really is to bring the light into that community. You know,
yeah.
I hope I'm not like, you know, talking depression here.
No. You're shining a light bulb. You know, that's the whole idea. There's another. Yeah. I got a quote of yours. I can't remember where I saw it, but somewhere on the internet, and it said, "When you sing, time stops." Tell me about that.
Yeah. Okay. So when you sing a song, I think it, let me see that I'm going to have a hard time quoting this. I found it. When you sing a song, When you sing a song, you lose your gray hair. When you sing a song, you lose your wheelchair. When you sing a song, you've lost all fear, and what remains is love. And when you sing a song, Einstein sighs a high note in his sleep. Now, he was a musician.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm prone to my friends to use a few Einstein quotes, so I know exactly what you mean. Another thing I saw in your videos, I mean, you've taken it all on the road as well in different states, and turned it into a little geography documentary of getting people to guess where you are and everything else.
Right. It's like, where's Waldo, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I got that idea during COVID. What I did was, like, you know, I know there's people down in Southwest Florida where I live that are from Massachusetts. So I went up there and I went to Harvard and I went to, you know, Cambridge, and I went to Gloucester, and these are all like same names in British, right? I went there and I videoed myself playing music in the different places, you know, on the beach and in the Berkshires. And so I brought those back, all those videos back, and I chopped them up. And I sat next to a blank wall and I started talking about the American Revolution. And I started talking about the great, you know, baseball and football teams and all these different aspects of Charles River. And then there'd be pictures so that it would bring somebody, if they were from Massachusetts, they would find a way home. Yeah.
Yeah, so. I think it's a great thing. You kind of put all these things together, and we kind of realise they're all pieces of a jigsaw, aren't they? And that in terms of people living with dementia, we should concentrate, you know, it's quite, this show's called the D word, you know, you should concentrate on the person, not the D word. And unfortunately, we find more and more people are concentrating on the D word, and people are defined really by their diagnosis.
Isn't that true? And then some people, you know, define themselves by their own diagnosis as well. You know, that's where they live in that. But for somebody with dementia, you know, it's, that's what we do. We define, you know, and there I go on back again to the individual. You know, they're misplaced. We misplace them. I have these shows sometimes where I get a juggler and I'll get way too tall Tori, and she stands on stilts and does really beautiful balloon jewelry for people. And we'll invite three or four communities into this one place. And then we play and we entertain. So it's a little bit of a circus, and they love it. They're wearing their hats that Way Too Tall Tori wrote, and Gerard's over there juggling. And I just, and it's outside of their community. So they get to go on a field trip, which I really applaud the communities to, you know, I have to lay that down. I applaud the communities who really go beyond the money and into we need to socialize our friends here and bring them together and take them places. I love that. I love it when I see them do that.
I think that, you know, the value of social activity is, I still think that, you know, we're in a medically, unfortunately, a medically obsessed world, with the greatest respect of what you did in ER and all the marvellous things people in the hospitals do. But outside of that setting, we still don't take seriously how important social interactions are.
Yeah, and you know, it's the horizon, opening a horizon for them, a perspective. And you know, I I don't like saying them. I really don't like classroom, but I guess there's no other way to say that. But you know, for us to open the horizon, so it's like me for my pilgrimages. If I live in one place and I only do one thing, I stay that. But if I go to some place and see a culture completely different, and I talk with people around the world of different cultures, I change. And if I don't do that, I get stuck in a doldrum. And I really believe that that's the human nature. I think these people, they probably starve for it, unless they're, you know, they don't want to go anywhere and they're happy with that. But I do believe that there's a real desire to go beyond the horizon for them of their little place.
Absolutely. And I think also, you know, it's the value of people like yourself and a lot of people like I talk to who actually, why go think outside the box? Don't go down traditional routes, but, you know, we think outside, you know, perhaps I thought outside the box when I started this show a little bit, but those are the important things. But sometimes it's a bit of a battle for those people who make the policies and whatever to actually understand how important thinking outside the box is.
Yes. Absolutely. And I think that's why when I see the managing director watching my shows, I think that's real important, you know, that they support it, that the companies that hire them support entertainment. And I can't just say music, because there's all types of, stimulant entertainment out there, you know. But I like wearing a remote. I like getting right with each person. And that's and then, you know, the other thing is talking about what I'm doing. Like, I was at the beach last night, you know, the birds were flying, and I know there was this and that, and describing the sunset and describing. So these are mental images that I use, mental images all the time with them. And you know what? Humor. I use a lot of humor, and I play on myself, you know, like I'm duh, like I'm dumb. So I will make fun of myself. And even if somebody doesn't understand, or I don't think they understand, they're still going to laugh because everybody else is laughing. And, you know, there's just something about stringing the group along. Again, I could be playing in front of 90, 100, 2,000 people. I'm not sure if that would be more satisfying than playing in front of a half a dozen or two dozen people who have the D word.
I think you said it earlier in the conversation, didn't you? When you know, you go and see Mick Jagger, he's not singing a U. I can remember when I went to see Mick Jagger, he was this small little pinpoint somewhere in the distance, and that, you know, there wasn't a connection. Whereas, you know, you got 15 people or 20 people around you, you got a real connection.
Got a connection, and then I try to sew connections between them too. You know, and you know, I'll make fun, not in a mean way, but I'll make fun of somebody here, and or I'll say something about them, or notice something with them, and then I'll join it with somebody else, and you know, it's they become alive. Like I played this one place yesterday, the whole place they were singing like drunken sailors. And then I'll say that, and then I'll go into, you know, what do you do with the drunken sailor? You know, and then they all start singing with it, right? So when you entertain, and I have videos out there on how to entertain Alzheimer's or dementia related conditions, and they're really I think they're really good for people. See, what happens is, and I'm gonna put a shot here. A lot of musicians won't play it. Number one, they don't understand the pathology of the condition. And number two, they don't pay. They pay like musicians want the money now, but they don't pay for a month or 2 months or sometimes three. So I wish that the whole configuration would change, because there's really, really good entertainers out there. That could be. And the other thing is when people volunteer, it's really nice. You know, they go and they sing or they play. So it's nice. But people who are professional and do what they do. Someone told me this a long time ago and I didn't understand it, but now I do. If you want really good musicians, pay your musician. If they do a job then they will come back if you pay them. And if they do a job, it's a win-win because you're the people you are taking care of are being taken care of on that level too.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
On this edition of the D-Word podcast, I'm talking entertainment therapy with my guest, Nurse Bob. So it's certain, you know, you start, you know, what we've been talking about, it's the whole show, isn't it? And it's also, you know, no matter if you're a professional musician or whatever, you need to understand your audience. And this is just one class of audience. And when you understand that audience, then you can, you know, as your book says, you can perform miracles.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, the show doesn't start when the microphone turns on. It starts when I walk in the door, at the front door, not the locked front door. So for me, it starts right there. And then as I'm walking through, hey, how you doing? Hey, blah. And then when I get to the locked door, the threshold, which I call it, and that's also a story in the book, then they're watching every move you make because they don't, that's what they do. They watch it. So the show really starts at the door, and if they're watching, and then I'll say, yeah, I'm doing this now, I'm going to take out my speaker, and I start talking to them and communicating with them and drawing them to the center, which is where the entertainment is, and then paying attention to them then you turn the mic on, and that's when the show really begins. And
Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, I said when I first started, I stood outside a hole with 18 people living with dementia inside it. And I had a little voice in my head said, I have no idea what I'm going to do. And so I walked through the door and another little voice said, just be you. So I was, you know, I was born in London, like my sport. I like to think I've got good sense of humour. And we just played on all those things. And suddenly the old dementia went out of the window. To be honest, it didn't exist anymore. It was just Pete and 18 people who became my friends.
Yes, yes. They love that. And then, you know, I'll tell them stories of my past. They really follow the stories. They follow things. And then I'll ask questions, has anybody ever done this? And you'll get hands raised. And has anybody ever done that? So it has to be. And I really promote hooting and hollering and whatever they want to do. Yesterday, this one woman interrupted me. And I, not really, because I didn't stop doing what I'm doing, but I look right at her and I'm like, yes, yes, yes. So she's just, her way of expressing was for like long periods, right? And she was from, where was she from? Scotland. Yeah. So of course, you know, and she's a doc, and I'd say doctor, right? So I'd say, hey, doc, you know, and I call him like that, you know, and I got my scrub on. By the way, I don't know if you can see that Songs Unlocked.
Oh, I can see it. Yeah,
I've got a whole bunch of a music prompts memory. Let's see, music is the language of dementia. That's a shirt. And here's one: music, dementia's secret garden. These are shirts I wear. When I thought, isn't that nice?
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff.
So she was just screeching away while I'm playing. And I'm encouraging it, right? That's how she communicates with me.
Yeah, it's so. Communication is definitely the key. Unfortunately, times where it's a bit of a close, but I've got to ask you, I mean, you're doing so well there where you are. When is Nurse Bob's UK tour going to happen?
Oh, tour?
Yeah, why not?
This is terrible. Yeah, well, you know, unfortunately, I can't fill stadiums with 10,000 people.
Oh, no.
You know, and unfortunately, they're going to only pay X amount of money no matter where I'm at because it's their budget. But what I should do is really work on that, work on the collective show, and get and have three or four communities go to one place, and maybe that's where that can happen. So.
Well, we'll look forward to it. Bob, it's been an absolute pleasure. And please just keep doing what you're doing because you're doing a great job.
And you too, Pete. You've been doing this a while and you do a lot of shows.
Yeah, I've been doing it 7 years and we've done over 300. So, yeah.
I just went through that podcast. Congratulations and thank you for your time. And I
No.
want to thank the caregivers out there,
Yeah.
okay? I want to thank everybody who sacrifices themselves and does what they do for these people who cannot,
Yeah, that's a
So.
great message, Bob. Thanks for being my guest.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to Bob for telling us his story. And if you want to find out more, it's at eldercareentertainment.com. The world definitely needs more nurse Bobs. Thanks for your company here on The D Word, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on The D Word Podcast.